step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Folks, welcome to another one of our political chats, where today we're going to be talking about the battle for Makerfield. So in Wigan, there is a constituency called Makerfield, and it has been triggered for a by-election by the resignation of Labour MP John Simons. Now, Josh Simons. Now, this has been done in order to allow Andy Burnham, the current mayor of Manchester, to have a run at the Parliament so that he can trigger a leadership challenge against Keir Starmer and save the Labour Party.
Well, I mean, that's a theory, isn't it?
That's the goal.
I mean,
it's the point.
Let's say you do get Andy Burnham. Everything is still going to be broken.
Yes.
You're just going to have a different person.
And I think that we'll talk about Andy Burnham's record at some point as well, because it's not as actually amazing as it might seem.
Well, there is a reason that he didn't get on in Westminster politics, and he went off to Manchester.
Yes.
He's not coming from Manchester because he is a once-in-a-generation politician who took Westminster by storm. That is not what happened.
It's certainly not. So for anyone who doesn't know, Andy Burnham represents basically the last great hope of the sort of soft left faction. He's been endorsed by Angela Rayner, and he's to the left of Wes Streeting. Wes Streeting represents the kind of Blairite managerialists who really are lined up behind Keir Starmer, but have realised that Keir Starmer is the kiss of death.
Well, is he though? Because I mean, there's a joke that they tell inside the Labour Party, which is a Blairite, a Corbynite, and a soft left MP walks into a bar, and the barman says, "Hello, Andy."
They do, and this is because Andy Burnham is not he's not someone who's excessively ideological.
No.
But he's in that milieu. Yeah. And I mean, you can say something similar about Starmer as well. There's a lot of sort of factional positioning in Labour. I mean, think of Starmer's rise back in Corbyn.
Yes.
And then betraying Corbyn, and then essentially stomping on the entire Labour Party itself and showing complete contempt for it. Some people are quite hard to pin down, but Burnham, he's got a bit of everything in him. That is true, which hence the joke.
I mean, people are finding these videos of things that he said over the years, but you can also find a video of him saying the opposite.
Because
he's out for his career.
Yes, he does seem like something of a careerist. Mm. But I always hate having to hold that against someone. It's like, you wanted to be successful, and you took moves to be successful. It always feels a bit cynical to use that as an angle of attack. So I'm not really in favour of saying, oh, it's careerism.
I mean, there is something to be said for getting in a class of politicians who don't particularly want to be politicians, who'd rather be doing something else.
There is.
Yeah.
But also, Andy Burnham has had some consistencies over the years, right? Yeah. So, for example, he's wanted to have state-run institutions such as, you know, water, the buses, take Manchester for example, and, you know, various other what they feel as vital public services, they'd like to be owned by the government. And to be honest with you, there's an argument there to be made.
Yes.
So it's I don't view him through this particularly an exclusively cynical lens of just being a careerist.
No, I just sort of somewhat reject the suggestion of, you know, Labour's got its soft left and its hard left and its right. We're starting from a position where state spending in this country is 45% of GDP and indirectly controls another 25%.
And that's not enough.
Our government, compared to China, communist China, as a proportion of GDP, our government is twice the size of China's.
Well, remember, we've covered this before. The Soviet Union was 50% of GDP when it fell. So anyway, let's get back to Makerfield. So Makerfield is, like I said, a constituency in Wigan, and these are the results for the 2024 election. And you see Josh Simons won it by quite a healthy margin, to be honest.
Yes, he did. But I don't know if you've got 2019, because 2019 is perhaps even a stronger example, because the whole story of 2019 was the red wall has become a blue wall. Mm-hmm. That was Boris Johnson's absolutely storming election, where he won a majority of 80. Even in 2019, Labour won it with a solid majority of 5,000.
Yeah.
So this part of the red wall didn't even go blue. Yeah. This is a proper Labour constituency.
Yes, this is one of those constituencies that has just always been Labour.
Yes.
Since the invention of democracy in this country. Yes. Labour are losing these, which is remarkable. I mean, but that's a great point that you make. It's a healthy margin, but it's not that healthy, considering what the constituency is.
Yeah, but I mean, this election, was you know, not the worst setup for Labour, actually. But yeah.
Yeah, no, it was fine, which is why they won it. 45% vote share, which is very respectable. The interesting thing is, for us, I think, that the turnout was only 52%.
Right.
So 48% of the constituency just didn't bother. Now, the question here then is, well, why did Reform fail to turn out the other half of the electorate?
It's almost as if what this constituency really needs is a party that's really good at getting non-voters back in the voting system.
Yeah. And it's the same with Gorton and Denton, where you had about 47%, I think it was, turnout.
Despite it being a by-election and national attention, yeah. And because the argument will be, yep. Oh, but by-elections, they get more attention. Well, how come Reform didn't do it there either?
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. How is it you didn't mobilise the white working class there? So anyway, as you can see, there's no other options from this particular election. Like the Conservatives, Liberal Democrats, Greens, and like other, no chance in hell, frankly, of them winning.
I suspect Greens will do a lot better this time.
Maybe, but we'll get on to the information about the seat, actually. Let's talk about the seat. So this is a 65% leave voting area, which is pretty leavey. Mm. There we go. Some details there. It's got an average income of £32,000, £150,000 the average house price. 58% of people are employed, 47% of them homeowners. Weirdly, only 32% of them are married. In this sort of area, you'd have expected marriage rates to have been a lot higher.
It's not a student area, is it?
It's not a student area. Doesn't have a university, and it's 95-96% white English.
Well, so, that's worrying.
Yeah. You'd expect the marriage rates to be a bit bloody higher, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Especially with the house prices being 150K.
Yeah. But, I'm not sure what the difference between locality and ward is on this one. But it says in the seat 47%, which is about on average for the country. So maybe I'm misreading that. But anyway, it's, as you can still see, it's 68% Christian. So this is indicative of the sort of working class areas that have been left behind in the country. And so actually...
90% white?
97%, yeah.
97%, wow, okay.
So
I don't see that much anymore in the big cities.
No, but it's quite proximal to Manchester and other areas of Wigan,
right,
that are not 97% white.
Quite.
So like with Clacton and Great Yarmouth, actually, this is not so terribly dissimilar.
Mm. I mean, this looks like the sort of seat that Reform would expect to do well in.
Yes. And they have done well in, actually. We'll get to that in a minute. We've got some further information here. Here's the by-election information from 20... sorry, the local... What am I looking at here? This is just further information. These are survation forecasts. And as you can see, Labour are predicted... with a candidate other than Burnham to get absolutely swatted by Reform. But if they have Burnham as the candidate, it's expected that he will squeak in. Now, whether...
So wait, Burnham's personal vote is 18-20%?
Yeah.
A hell of a personal vote.
He's the only Labour politician who has a positive approval rating.
That's because he's the only Labour politician that anyone has heard of who isn't in Westminster.
I suspect
that's why.
I suspect a lot of people haven't heard of him either. I mean, if you were to walk around just, you know, Somerset Moors or something and say, what do you think of Andy Burnham?
Yeah, well, I'm sure people in Wigan have.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very regional. But in this region, which he happens to be running in,
yes,
sensibly, standing in, sorry, he's got a lot of political cachet here. And he's generally viewed in a positive manner because he seems, I mean, and just on a personal, he seems like a really nice guy, right? He does seem like a nice chap. He's not an inhuman automaton like Kirsten.
He may have a soul and he may dream, unlike somebody.
Yeah, he comes across a lot more like the kind of naive student politician of a sort of Angela Rayner type, right? Mm. So it's, she wants good things and not bad things.
Yes,
she likes people. He doesn't hate the country and whatnot.
Best intention, unfortunately, clueless.
Yeah, that's genuinely how he comes across. And also, he's one of the few in Labour who's receptive to the idea that actually the white working class being left behind by Labour's dance with the radical left under Corbyn and extreme Blairite managerialism has not won any favours and not won any affections from a seat like this, right? He's actually quite switched on to this because, of course, this is like the ex-industrial heartland of Northern England. So these are people who feel, and rightly so, I think,
yes,
betrayed by Labour. And that's why at the local election results, they got completely spanked by Reform. In every seat, in every ward, yes, in Makerfield, Reform won them all.
So it's difficult to go on the limited information I have, but from the limited reaching out to people who are actually from this area tell me, they absolutely hate Labour.
Yeah.
They feel utterly, utterly betrayed. And actually, the guy I was talking to is saying, well, don't think that just because Andy Burnham is running, that means they're all going to vote for him. Because even if he does come in and save Labour, they don't want that.
Yeah.
They want Labour Party destroyed, much of the same way as we felt about the Tories a few years ago.
And a massive problem that the Labour Party have is, of course, Keir Starmer. Now, Burnham's primary argument here is, well, I'm running to unseat Keir Starmer. In fact, we'll get into that in a little bit. So Burnham does have a kind of mimetic weapon to use against that line of attack. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, fool me a third, fourth and fifth time. Okay, Andy Burnham comes knocking, saying, well, hey, I'm here to change the Labour Party. So, you know, do I want to change the Labour Party?
So I'm not a man of a left, so I suppose maybe I have no right to make this claim, but I am a creature of the right. And when Kemi came along and said, well, look, I know we've betrayed you for every single past Tory government, but trust me, with me it's going to be different. I'm like, no, I don't think I find that persuasive. Maybe people on the left will find it persuasive if you just change the leader, you know, it will all, I don't know.
So I think it's important that we actually define left and right, because these are usually ideological signifiers. And so we are quite comfortable saying Zach Polanski is on the left because Zach Polanski is ideologically essentially just a communist, right? I don't think Zach Polanski has any kind of thoroughgoing political or ideological or philosophical understanding of the left. No. I just think he understands it well enough to be able to parrot it in interviews. And whenever he's dragged off script, you can see he kind of starts just spitting fascist at people.
But there's no first order thinking going on.
No. It's not even that. It's all first order thinking. It's all rationalistic, front of the brain.
Right.
Without any kind of deep understanding of the theories that led up to this point, right? That's not what Wigan and Makerfield are, as far as I can tell. Just to be clear, I've never been there, so I'm just judging from an outsider's perspective. But that's not what this looks like to me. So to call them left is not to call them left in an ideological sense, but more in a practical sense. And we've spoken about this before, but I think it's worth reiterating. I think there are real differences between the North and the South in what they expect out of life. And I think that the North, the industrial heartland of England, much like the Welsh valleys, are not full of entrepreneurs. Right? They're not full of people who are ruthless capitalists who expect essentially a kind of life of unlimited and unbounded freedom to pursue their own ends. What these people are, I think, like with the people in the Welsh valleys, is the people who for 250 years were the industrial backbone of an empire. So philosophically, their worldview was completely contained within the idea of duty and obligation, right?
Northerners are definitely much more somewheres than your average southerner.
Very much so. But the perspective is a lot more sort of old British, old English. We are providing for the empire, and therefore, you know, as we
duty and obligation.
Yes. And so duty and obligation, not just to the local communities, but to the country at large. And so
and also they expect the same from their leaders. They expect we give you duty, you give us obligation.
Yes, we break our bodies to spend our lives producing the steel, the manufacturing, the coal that the empire uses to crush our enemies abroad. You make sure we are well taken care of.
Yes.
These are people that fundamentally believe in national industries.
I mean, the old trope is the British Army is northern soldiers, southern officers.
Absolutely. But this is, I think, the North's view on the economy as well. And this is why in the North, if you look at the politicians like, you know, Burnham, Angela Rayner, and those sorts of types, they do not have the same kind of like Thatcherite view that Essex man has.
Yeah.
In the south of England, we've got a much more sceptical view of state intervention in the economy because we didn't grow up in generations upon generations and generations of people who worked almost exclusively in state industries. Right.
Yes.
So these people would have worked in the steelworks or the shipyards or in Wales, the coal mines and things like that. These are not entrepreneurial industries. Mm. These are industries that were of strategic importance for the British state and therefore controlled by the British state. And therefore these people lived in actually a very quite rigid market, right? You are going to grow up. And if you're in Wales, you're going to become a coal miner. If you're in somewhere like Wigan, you're going to be a steel worker or something, or factory worker or something like this. Right.
It's the furnace of Britain, not the shop front.
Exactly. Right. And so one thing on the right that we have to understand is that means that these people they're deeply patriotic people, as you can see from the election results, but they're not rabid free market capitalists.
No.
But they're also not dogmatic Marxists, right? So a lot of people will say what they expect out of life is socialism, and only in the most general sense. If you were to sort of narrow it down to any kind of ideological doctrine of socialism, all of these people would reject it as being anti-British, right? And so, like, the socialism of it is actually the kind of paternalistic, patrician socialism.
Well, you've got to remember that the socialism of, you know, the 80s and before was very much against open borders.
Completely.
The left-wing position was
Union, open borders, all of it.
It was always a right-wing idea, bringing in cheap labour, and that was completely rejected by it. It was only really when Tony Blair came in that what he did is he skewed the British left from being a somewhere organisation to being a globalist organisation.
Completely correct. And you still see the sort of lingering remnants of it in people like Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn, that kind of old left that were sceptical.
Yes.
Like Bernie Sanders calling it a Koch brothers plan is correct.
Exactly. And even though Blair broke it, because they had been voting for the Labour Party for generations.
Where else are we going to go?
Yeah, their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, their great-great-grandparents had all voted Labour.
Probably going back to the very beginning of democracy.
Yeah, well, going certainly the beginning of the Labour Party, certainly.
Absolutely.
And so when Tony Blair broke that model, it didn't turn off on a dime. But I think the penny has truly dropped in the North now that this brand of left-wingism is nothing like your values.
Yes, and this is what the Wigan local election results show, where literally Reform won every ward. And so this is the kind of place that it is, as far as I can tell. I think I have a bead on it there. And so This leads us into, I guess we'll just kind of look at the current polling. It's not changed dramatically. Reform have had a very slight bump from the local elections, but not much of one, frankly. And if I were Reform, I would have hoped for a much bigger bump out of this. So the landscape hasn't dramatically changed.
Yeah, it really hasn't, has it?
And so I guess we'll begin with, okay, well, what's the state of play in the Labour Party? Well, Starmer has said, I'm not resigning. Now, the rumours were that he was going to set out a timetable for his resignation,
yeah,
or that he was just going to accept that everyone around him, they've been making all of these manoeuvres that have been quite public, and so Keir Starmer has seen them all, and he's just impervious to it.
I may have made a bet on the last podcast that he would be gone. At this point,
oh, so yeah, you're a tenner, don't you?
I'd better pay up. There we go.
Good point. Yeah,
there we go.
Oh. Thanks. I'll get that afterwards.
All right.
That's a good point. I forgot all about that, but yeah.
Hopefully, I can still feed my children tonight. But, yeah, I lost that one, fair and square.
Should have made it a grand, shouldn't I? Yeah. Anyway, so I told you he wasn't going to resign because Starmer holds the rest of his party in utter contempt.
And I just thought he's U-turned on absolutely everything. Why can't he U-turn on this?
I'm not going to U-turn on hating the people around me. That's eternal.
Yeah. He's not going to be able to do anything now. No civil servant is going to bust their ass over the weekend on some project of his. No ministers are going to take it. Nobody is going to be listening to this man.
Only if he truly crushes them all in some sort of leadership election will he be able to gain any kind of political capital back, I think. Wes Streeting has resigned from his government. He's not actually declared because it's rumoured, it was assumed that Wes Streeting only got 44 people to back him.
Yes.
He needs 81, so he couldn't actually trigger it. And Keir Starmer just came out and said, nothing's been triggered, I'm going to carry
44
on.
Would have been enough until the but one of the first things Starmer did is he changed the rules when he came in, and he changed it from 40 to 80, precisely because he could foresee a situation where his soulless ass was going to get voted out of office.
Yep, Keir Starlin was properly on it. So anyway, basically what's going to happen? Well, YouGov thinks that essentially Wes Streeting's going nowhere, and if Starmer is challenged by Wes Streeting, 59%, 65% think that Starmer would be preferable to Streeting. He only got 15% of the Labour membership backing him in that.
If you're Wes Streeting, he's got to really burn that you can't win against Keir Starmer in a popularity contest.
The most unpopular Prime Minister since records began, and Wes Streeting can't beat him. I mean, Starmer, the reason we're supporting Starmer in all of this is because Starmer is leading the Labour Party to absolute destruction.
I've got to say, it doesn't bother me. I don't care.
I think it's great.
It doesn't bother me who gets in, because I mean, this idea that Andy Burnham will save Labour, nothing will change. Absolutely nothing will change. They're all going to have the same set of constraints. They're all going to have the same fact that we've run out of money in this
Let me pin that, because we will come back to exactly
because
you have correctly presaged precisely what's going to be the case.
Yes.
But anyway, as you can see from the polling, Burnham is on 47% compared to 31% for first preference of Labour leadership over Starmer. So it is likely that if Burnham can get in and he will be able to get enough signatures to trigger a leadership election, Starmer has already said he's not standing down, so he will automatically be running in opposition to Burnham. And Burnham will probably win. I agree with you that I don't think it's going to change anything. I don't think it's going to save the Labour Party at the moment. I think the brand has been pretty irredeemably tainted at this point. So I don't think that's going anywhere. And Wes Streeting, and this is the thing with the sort of like these two factions and the soft left, they're not terribly brave. Because, I mean, you've seen Burnham hovering around this for a long time. Well, he didn't move.
You don't get to participate in the uni party if you are brave.
Yes.
That they very much select for yes men.
Yeah.
So it's not a surprise that there was a crashing lack of bravery at the key moment on anything.
No, and this is why Catherine West, someone no one had ever really heard of, had to kind of force their hand into it. But even then, Catherine West came out and said, "Yeah, if it happens, I'll probably vote for Starmer." Oh, okay, amazing. But you know what? Yeah. Wes Streeting might not have, well, anyone else's support, but he does have Peter Mandelson's support. Because remember...
Well, that's worth something,
a,
I guess.
He's a Mandelson protege.
Yeah.
How wonderful. Now, he resigned from Starmer's cabinet, which means that Starmer needs a health secretary. Well, I mean, there's a few people knocking around who are free, aren't there? Like Angela Rayner. Why not invite her?
Is he hasn't done that, has he?
He's invited her, but she's refused.
He offered it.
He offered it.
Oh, I didn't see that. He offered it, and she was like, no thanks.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer, I assume. No idea.
So that's why Angela Rayner was in the press a few weeks ago as having given up vaping.
Maybe
it was because she was keeping her options open.
I didn't see that.
It was like the sort of thing that Beth Rigby and all those sort of second grade political commentators were talking about. And I was like, why is this a story? It suddenly makes sense. She was keeping her options open just in case she agreed to this, but she decided not to in the end.
So it turns out that Burnham was chosen as the candidate, by the way.
Right.
And he gives there's this kind of false humility that they're all projecting at the moment, that everyone from the Labour tries to project. And he ends it with, I would feel privileged to be given the opportunity to represent Makersfield. It's like, well, okay, everyone can tell this is entirely Machiavellian, right?
It's very obvious you're not doing this. You didn't give up Mayor of Manchester because you suddenly felt, actually, screw the rest of Manchester. It's this is the bit I like. No, it's clearly not that, is it? It's because Starmer is absolutely dying on his arse out there. That's why you're doing it.
Yeah. Just to be clear, he hasn't given up the mayorality of Manchester, right? So according to the way that the system works is to be a candidate in the election, he doesn't have to give up the mayoralty. If he wins, then he does. So if he loses, he carries on as he is. So actually, this is minimal risk for Andy Burnham in order to save the Labour Party. Now, weirdly enough, Keir Starmer has endorsed him.
Well, I suppose he has to.
Oh, you kind of do, don't you?
I mean, publicly.
Yeah, but you blocked him from being able to run previously.
If Keir Starmer wants to completely sabotage Andy Burnham, he should go to Makerfield and campaign for him.
Well,
and stand next to him at every single photo opportunity with his arm around him.
According to all of the sort of like insider podcasts, like the Times podcast and things like that, Burnham has begged him not to come. Keir Starmer, in fact, during the local elections, he made the fewest number of public appearances with the candidates on campaign. He only made it 11,
right,
compared to like Farage's 44. Because everyone was well aware that actually turning up with Keir Starmer in tow is bad for you.
Well, yeah, but that's how Keir Starmer sabotages him.
It is. Anyway, yes, Keir Starmer, in a show of magnificence, has said, no, Angela Rayner, I'm not threatened by you. Come on in, even though she was thinking about running as the candidate. Oh, Andy Burnham's running specifically to unseat me. I support him 100%.
I mean, the last time he tried to run for a seat, he rigged the process so that Andy Burnham couldn't run for it.
I know.
So it's gone from at least 49% to 100% bloody quickly, isn't it?
But you can tell that the feeling in the Labour Party is, oh, this is really getting quite existential now. So the NEC is not a unified body. I watched the Times podcast from one woman who was a member of it, who clearly was very anti-Starmer and pro-Burnham, explaining the process of how they're going to essentially strategize to get Burnham through. He did get through. He is the candidate. So this obviously worked. And basically what this must have meant is persuading the Starmerites on there that, look, Starmer's going to get us all killed. Like, what are you doing? Politically, we are crushed. What are you doing? You've got to let us at least have a chance.
Is the argument I've been making on these shows for months. It's just pick anyone. Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham. Just throw a bloody dart in the tea room, and whoever it hits, make them, because you're heading towards four seats.
No, good. I like
so even it. If you get seven seats, you've won.
Yeah, no, let them have it. This is what Kemi Badenoch's local election celebrations are about. We only lost 500 seats, not 700 seats. I'm a winner. Anyway, so who is Andy Burnham? Right, so we'll go through a bit of a profile on Andy Burnham.
Why is he titled Pretty Straight?
Because
does he have one or two experiences at university that?
No, he's quite boring, basically.
In right. Ways.
So he was born in 1970 in Aintree, studied English at Fitzwilliam College, Cambridge. Before entering Parliament, he worked in political and public policy roles, including for Tessa Jowell, the NHS Confederation, and the Football Task Force. So he's never had a real job.
Right.
He's got an English degree.
Obviously the man to lead the country then.
Yeah.
Never looked at a P&L in his life. Yeah. Let's make him the leader.
Yeah. Never had a job that actually pays taxes outside of working for the state.
Yeah.
He became a Labour MP for Ley in 2001, holding a seat until he left the Commons in 2017 to become Mayor of Manchester. During the new Labour-Brown government years, he rose quickly through ministerial office. He served in the Home Office, Department of Health, Treasury, and then became Chief Secretary to the Treasury in 2007, Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport in 2008, and Health Secretary from 2009 to 2010, when Labour was kicked out by the Lib Dem Conservative Coalition.
Then he ran against Corbyn and got trounced.
Yeah, he did. After Labour lost power in 2010, he remained prominent in opposition. He was Shadow Education Secretary, Shadow Health Secretary, Shadow Home Secretary, and ran twice unsuccessfully for the Labour leadership. So what this tells us is a man who's just never been outside of Labour Party politics.
Yeah.
His entire life, his entire career. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, his politics became associated with a soft left, public service focused Labour tradition around the NHS, social care, transport, housing and regional inequality. In 2017, he left Westminster and was elected the first mayor of Greater Manchester, re-elected in 2021 and again in 2024. He focused on rough sleeping, developing public services, skills, housing policy and transport policy. His flagship achievement is the B Network, including bringing Greater Manchester buses under public control through franchising.
that only helps so much in Makersfield, because Makersfield is very much a commuting town. It's a bit weird. I mean, it is in Manchester, but it's also sort of in Liverpool. You know, they're in the Greater Manchester area, but a lot of them support Everton in Liverpool. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But it's
so does Burnham. Burnham supports Everton.
Yeah, but I mean, of the sort of key policies, the one that people always say is the bus stuff, that won't make any difference to the people in Makersfield, I don't think.
Yeah. He gained a lot of notoriety during the COVID pandemic as he clashed with the Conservative government over financial support.
I will give him that. I'll totally give him that. He was one of the very few people who was pushing back in any way.
Yep.
He wasn't straight out coming out and saying the stuff that I would have said, which is complete nonsense. He was arguing about the tiers structure and stuff like that. But he was at least one of the voices who was pushing back on that madness. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm. And this helped him get his sort of northern champion reputation, king of the north, as it were. People keep saying king of the north. It's king in the north, dummies. Anyway.
Well, and also nobody north of the M25 actually says that
it's a very Westminster coded thing to say.
Or, I mean, possibly Andy Burnham himself says that he's king of the north, but nobody else says it.
Yeah. So he's got quite a prominent profile, especially in the Labour Party, but not really very far outside of the North. If you are someone who's just somewhere else in the country, in the Midlands, in the South, Andy Burnham's name doesn't really mean all that
much. I'm pretty sure if I knocked on my neighbour's door and asked, they won't have heard of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
My normie friends won't have heard of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no particular reason that they should have done.
No.
Which is why he's got an approval rating of about 37% positive, about 25% negative, and then the rest are just no particular opinion.
I'm confident we can get those numbers down. If he does end up becoming Prime Minister, those numbers will be gone in no time.
Yeah, and it's because he just doesn't really know what he's doing. But we'll talk about Manchesterism in a bit. So that's the candidate for the Labour Party. The Lib Dems have said they're going to be standing a candidate, which seems like a waste of £500.
I don't think Makersfield is a particularly big garden place.
Well, no, we've already covered it, haven't we? It's £32,000, £150,000 house on average.
Yeah, this is not Lib Dem territory.
No. YouGov have actually come out, there's a little graph here where that proved our point, because we were running on vibes, there we go, voting intention by income level. The average Lib Demer is somewhere between 40,000 to 70,000 plus. So it just average wage in in Makerfield is 32,000. So this is why Lib Dems never really have had any particular standing here. And the Greens are also standing a candidate, even though Caroline Lucas is like, this might be a bad idea, because what if we split the Labour vote and allow some evil far-righter in?
Somebody should point out to her that she's in a political party, and what political parties do is they stand candidates for election.
Yeah, this I mean, you say that, but Jacob Rees-Mogg is like, I don't think the Tories should stand candidates.
Okay, radical idea. How about we let the voters decide who they want to vote for?
That is a radical idea.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, the Greens are going to be standing candidate. I'm not very concerned about the Greens in this constituency. There's no students or foreigners. No, I mean, that simply is literally, there's no
students. There must be one or two impressionable young women left, but so I'm sure they get something.
Yeah. They'll get a few percentage points, doubtless. But I, like I said, I just don't think this is one of those constituencies.
We're not going to be seeing the Greens campaigning entirely in Bangladeshi, those videos.
Weirdly, I don't think they will. I mean, there are very few people in Makerfield who just genuinely hate their own constituency in the country at large.
Right? Yeah.
This is not one of those.
Yeah.
It's not Bristol or Brighton or anywhere like that, or, you know, Bradford South or wherever. You know, this is a place of normal English people who are sick of the way the country's being run and don't want that anymore.
Right.
So no more of Zach Polanski. Like I said, the Tories, Jacob Rees-Mogg said, look, the Tories shouldn't stand. But Kemi Badenoch said, no, I am going to stand a candidate.
She's the leader of a political party. This is what they do.
Yeah, and honestly, like, everyone's like, the Tories are going to split the vote. It's like, well, there's no evidence for that.
Yeah.
like, even in the best possible scenario, Makerfield was not a Tory place in 2019, for example.
No, I mean, to be fair, they did come second back in the days when you had two choices.
Like I said, under optimal conditions, they couldn't even win it. So they're going to stand a candidate, but I'm sorry, just the energy just isn't there. And I mean, I could, maybe if it was Jeremy Clarkson or something managed to run, then
I mean, he's a bit Oxford, isn't he? But whoever Northerners like.
Yeah. It's unlikely that they...
Maybe one of those Anton Deck things.
I haven't watched Anton Deck since I was a kid. Anyway, so...
Yes.
So the Tories aren't going to be running, the Lib Dems are going to be running, the Greens are going to be running, but I think these are all going to be non-entities. Reform are the people who we're going to be watching most closely, I think, because... I actually think that I think that Burnham's star is being overestimated. I've heard reports from people in the area that the Burnham love is over-egged.
Yeah, I find this difficult because I see a lot of people saying that sort of thing on Vox Pop stuff, but at the same time, whenever I see pollsters who've done their focus groups, apparently, and they've really dug into it, they seem pretty convinced that Andy Burnham is going to win, but. They are pollsters, and they get everything wrong. I mean, they predicted that the vote for Leave at the Brexit referendum was going to be like 15-20%. So, but to be fair, the people who do this full time for a living are convinced that Burnham is going to win. But I think you're right. I don't think it's going to go that way.
But anyway, so Reform are, of course, throwing everything at it, with a weird sort of Saruman-esque attitude. We're going to be closely monitoring the attendance of all of our campaigners and candidates. We'll expect you to demonstrate that in commitment in practice and not just on paper. It's like, all right, Jesus Christ, like, steady on. Like, there's a very strange attitude.
They're appealing to not loyalty, not support.
But kind of,
they're not appealing to anything positive in this.
No.
This is just... You have been told.
Yeah, very much so. And this has been the attitude that the local branches in Reform have objected to in the past.
Yeah.
Why the local ground game for Reform has not been very strong.
Well, I mean, if every communication is written like this, I'm surprised they have any branches left.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can see why a lot of them have defected before. But, I mean, just look at as you will be aware, the forthcoming Makerfield by-election represents a hugely important opportunity for the party. As somebody who has applied to become a prospective parliamentary candidate, there's an expectation that you play an active role in supporting major life campaigns such as this. All right, bloody hell.
There's not a single sentence in that which is, we would value, we need you, we want you.
Yeah.
It's... It, I mean, if you ever find yourself talking to your spouse like this, your marriage is doomed.
Oh, yeah. My wife would be bloody angry. Right. You know, we are therefore asking all parliamentary... We're not inviting you. We're asking you. Know, the parliamentary candidate applicants to commit to attending Makefield for a minimum of 3 full days campaigning between now and polling day. Attendance will be closely monitored and noted. Like, oh, Jesus Christ, all right. Like, what kind of attitude is this? Anyway, so... they did choose their candidate, and it's a good one, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't mind this guy, actually.
Yeah, Robert Kenyon. You've got to hand it to them. Dr. David Bull yesterday resigned as the chair of the party, and everyone knew that the announcement was coming today, so I was like, please God.
So my take on that was I thought that they were going to run Dr. David Bull because they were convinced that he would ChatGPT it. That he would crash and burn, which would send Burnham to Westminster, which would mean that they could have a run at the mayor of Manchester. I thought they were going to throw it, but no, it looks like they do actually want to try and win.
Yeah, I mean, Reform are put into a very strange position at the moment with messaging, because you remember in the local elections, the message was vote Reform to get Starmer out.
Yes.
Well, that didn't happen.
It's now vote Reform to keep Starmer in.
Yes, it is. And so it's a very strange... Yeah. Time for Reform.
We've always been at war with Eurasia kind of stuff.
Yeah, very much so. But we can watch this chap's video, because it's a very strong video.
I was born in Makerfield. If I was elected, I'd be the first person born in the constituency to become the MP. I don't think any MP that's ever stood in Makerfield was actually born in the area. I'm a plumber, gas engineer. I've done that for a long time. I did my apprenticeship when I was 18. I love being a plumber. I do enjoy it. It's hard. But I do enjoy it because I do take pride in my work. I don't know, it gets me a bit emotional sometimes thinking that there's a chance that I could be representing people in Parliament, because it's a massive honour. And people will be thinking, hang on a minute, he serviced my boiler last week.
Labour and probably the majority of the other parties have got career politicians, you know, they go to private school, to university, they get a job at a think tank, or they're an assistant to an MP. And then before you know it, they're parachuting into somewhere they've never even visited to stand as an MP. Now, they might know the system, they might know how politics works, they might know Westminster, but they don't know the area or the people, you know. You could read a book about something, but you'll never understand it until you actually do it.
For Andy Burnham, Makerfield will be a stepping stone, but for me, it's the only place I've ever wanted to represent.
So we'll stop with that. So you've got a good impression of... the kind of candidate. He's currently a councillor. He did win the, I think, Ashton in Makerfield ward. And he was the candidate that they ran in 2024 who came second. So he's got a local profile. Yes. And he will be someone, I mean, he actually comes across as an actual plumber.
Yes.
Unlike Hannah from Gordon and Denver.
Yeah, who, she was supposed to be a plumber, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was also meant to be a plumber. And obviously she wasn't really a plumber. She installed what was the heating system. The
heating engine or something.
There was some staller, outside heating thing. Okay. But apparently she did administration. But anyway.
So this is the type of guy that 100% would have been your bread and butter Labour voter in the 70s, even Labour MP. It's really only after the Blair River that sort of guy just got ejected from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, but he runs his own business.
Yeah.
If the Labour Party was full of guys who'd run their own business, we would be in a radically different situation.
Yeah. And he's got a good track record. He was a plumber, served in the British Army, worked for the NHS for 6 years, and he's a councillor there already for Reform. So he's a strong candidate, very strong candidate.
No, he's a good guy.
Seems like a really nice chap. Not sure about the line of attack, though. No, it's all of the candidates we get are private schoolboys who have never been to the constituency. Well, Andy Burnham isn't not from this place. He's not just a drop-in from nowhere. Mm. He is someone in the region and has roots there already. So it's not...
I think he's from that side of town. I don't think he's exactly within the Makerfield ball.
No.
But, I mean, he is...
He
would have been
area.
Mingling with people from Makerfield.
Yeah. He'll probably be able to say, when I was growing up, you know, I used to ride my bike over to here. It's my friend's house or somewhere, right? Like it's not that he can be like, he's the carpet bagging Matt Goodwin who's just dropped
that won't
in.
Work.
That's not gonna work, right? So the appeal to the sort of the very right wing appeal to place some parochialness is just not a strong fact here. So really, you've got to focus on Burnham himself. Anyway.
Can I just quickly say how nice it is that we're back in an era where candidates are from the place they're from?
Oh, thank God, yeah.
When I first got into politics in 97, I then had to watch... I mean, one of the first elections I got involved with was the Uxbridge by-election, long before Boris Johnson was there. This was a time long before. And the Labour candidate was like something Slaughter. He was a top London lawyer who got parachuted in, and the Conservative guy was again... I can't remember who the Conservative guy now was, but... Yep. That's nice. Getting back to actual people of the country, representing the people of the country, that is good.
I mean, for me, Rishi Sunak, I found the most annoying one.
Yes.
Because he was plucked out of Southampton and dropped in Richmond in York. And it's just like, sorry.
Latterly of Southampton, anyway.
Well, yeah. But he was grew up in Southampton. But we've got a super safe seat in Richmond, in York. So it's sorry, you're not from this. You do not represent this place at all.
No.
What are you doing here? Oh, this is entirely cynical to get the Goldman Sachs lawyer.
Richmond is a long way from Southampton.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you say, I'm actually really glad to see at least there is this understanding now that local people do not have to just vote red or blue. Mm. And the abandonment, and it was this pure commitment to, well, you've got the red or the blue rosette, so and this place votes for red or this place votes for blue, so it doesn't matter which pig we pin the rosette on. We can just dump some alien pig in your thing and pin the rosette to it, and you're going to vote for it. Well, that's good that paradigm is broken.
Yes.
No, what that means is I need someone authentically from this area because I can't just pin the blue rosette on the pig and expect you to vote for it. So it's like, fantastic. That's a great start. That's a great change. So what are Reform going to campaign on? Well, apparently Brexit.
Really? What? What was that then?
I have no idea. I assume it's because Andy Burnham has made the foolish mistake of saying, yeah, I'd like to rejoin the EU. Hang on, let's watch this.
Rejoin the EU or stay out?
Long term, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to say it. I want to rejoin. I hope in my lifetime I see this country rejoin the European Union.
So, I mean, we've just spent the last 15 minutes bigging up Reform. Oh, yeah, great candidate. We like that guy. That's good. Everything. Yeah, that's really good. But, okay, if he wins... He's not going to be able to rejoin the EU. And even if he had that power, which he would never get that across the line, he's not going to be able to do it. Even if he did, he now represents a seat which is 70% leave.
65, but close enough, yeah.
He's not going to touch it. This is a politician who has advocated almost every left-wing position on all sides, Blairite, soft left, Corbynist, all of them. He's not going to touch this at all. In fact... Not only that, right, but if he doesn't win, then we're going to get Miliband or Rayner, right? Miliband represents...
I think Starmer stays in.
Well, or Starmer stays in. Starmer is more likely to do it.
He is.
He knows that he's out.
He is,
Miliband represents Doncaster North, which was a mildly Leave constituency, and he's actually more likely to do it because he's got a solid majority. And Angela Rayner is 100% going to lose her seat at the next election and literally has nothing to lose. She is more likely to do it. Whereas if he wins this constituency, he's going to go into the next election expecting to win it. He's not going to upset his 65% leave back. So this whole attack line, this is not the attack line that you pick. What you do is you say, oh, actually, I can't think of any reform policies that are good. We will try and appeal to Islam so that we can win in 2015. Yeah.
We'll come to that in a second. So what's interesting here is this is very clearly... Andy Burnham has said, I'm very much against the Westminster bubble, but it's the Westminster bubble that's obsessed with Brexit.
Yeah.
They're the people who never got over Brexit. Right. If Andy Burnham's like, I represent the True North. Well, the True North was Brexit really quite heavily in some places, actually. Really heavily. Some of the most Brexit areas of the country.
Yes.
Like some of them are 65%, 70% in Oldham. Very, very heavily Brexit because it's that kind of old British socialism that's insular and isolationist.
Is not Islington lefty lawyer.
No, and no. That's what he's appealing to.
Yes.
Applaud for me, applaud for me. It's like, no, Andy. This was only in December 2025 as well.
Right.
So it's not like you'd be like, oh, that was 4 years ago during the referendum, or 6 years ago during the referendum. No, this was just last year, because you never got over it being part of the London bubble. Like, you think you're not, but you reveal yourself to be. And of course, that means that Farage and Reform, like, ah, yeah, well, we're going to put Brexit at the heart of it. Great. I really don't want to have to talk about Brexit again. I'm really tired. Do you not think we're exhausted of talking about Brexit?
But it doesn't take a lot of political skill to square the circle. No. All Burnham needs to do is come out and say, well, yes, it's an ambition of mine, but I would only ever consider it if, I don't know, these four tests are met. And he make one of them that it benefits the people, like the people in Makersfield. That'd be one of them. And then he set the other three criteria so that they're basically impossible. And everybody will look at it and go, oh, yeah, that's not going to happen, is it? And then he squared the circle of, yes, I support it. No, it's not going to happen. So he can neutral, if he's got a modicum of political skill, which he has, he would neutralise this attack line in 2 minutes.
He would, but he hasn't managed to. He's just like, well, I'm just not proposing this election.
Okay, I'll put everything I just said in a tweet and at him.
I mean, I think you're exactly right. We just literally set four criteria that we can't meet, and then you can just step past it and go, yeah, it doesn't meet the criteria, moving on. He hasn't done that. But anyway, he's sort of backtracked on this, but that's not persuasive either. So now, essentially, Andy Burnham is going to be dragged into discussing Brexit and the EU by Reform with an electorate that doesn't really want to talk about Brexit. Because we know this, because if you just look at what the most important issues facing...
Oh, is it going to be economy and immigration by
itself? Shockingly, wow. Economy and immigration. Like, no, nobody wants to talk about Brexit.
Right, now let's just check. So,
but let's see if we can get. I mean, these are just the top issues, but is that. Oh, there we go.
Leaving the EU
is 14%.
Oh, look, it was really high when we were in the EU, and now it's not because we're not in the EU.
Yeah, and so you've got a country who are just flat out exhausted about this subject, where like 13, 14% of people want to talk about this, whereas 50% of people on both, like 55% and 49% put immigration and the economy as the top issue, right? I mean, so London bubble obsession is going to be projected onto Makerfield.
Obviously, it's immigration and the economy. Yeah. I know the answer to why Reform doesn't want to talk about those things, because, well, they're weak on immigration because they don't want to send anyone back. I mean, I think they've made some noises now. After spending 3 years explicitly ruling it out,
yes,
they've now come out and said, oh, well, no, they sent Zaha Yusuf out to do it.
Yeah. Well, he's dark enough skinned to be
that he's allowed to. He can say, we can't, but he can
say. No, literally, Bo and you weren't allowed to say exactly
what Zaha Yusuf said. No, we were thrown out of the party for saying that. Yes.
Exactly. So not exactly reliable, but dragging up the ghost of Brexit, I think, is actually a really poor manoeuvre.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
If I were on the doorstep and I had a Reform candidate or a Reform canvasser, be like, hi there, did you know that Andy Burnham wants to take us back into the EU? Like, oh my God, I'm not voting for him either. You know, just Jesus Christ, it's just not on my radar at the moment, thank you very
Somebody
much.
Somebody knocks, the Tory knocks on the door. Andy Burnham is going to repeal the Corn Laws. Is that a...
Anyway, Andy Burnham wants to just build council houses for foreigners. He wants to, like, shock and surprise, he wants to do all of this, what he would call Manchesterism for the rest of the country. It's like, okay, but the rest of the country isn't the industrial heartland of the North. We actually do not necessarily want a massive council house building program on the scale, not since World War II, because we know who's going in those goddamn council houses, mate.
And it's not going to be the white British children.
Exactly. And what's worse for Burnham, and I think this is a real mistake, is that he has said on the doorstep that he's doing this to save the Labour Party. Listen to this.
I did do a protest vote, but now that you're back on board.
Oh, really? Right. Yeah, that definitely. Means everything. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm trying to get this party back to where it solidly should have always been, you know, and that's why I'm doing it.
There we go. Just out of the horse's mouth. I'm doing this because I'm trying to save the Labour Party.
But I mean, this is it. People don't remember that they have built him up in their minds to be this titanic figure of mythos. I remember when he was in the cabinet, he was considered C-list.
Oh, yeah, very much.
He was considered a second-rate politician, and that's why he buggered
very off. Much an Ed Miliband sort
yes.
of level, you know,
yes. It was so funny when Ed Miliband became leader. But yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that Ed Miliband is one of the leading lights of Labour now, it's like the degradation of your party. Now Andy Burnham is the thing that's coming forth to save it. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
I mean, he genuinely is one of the best in the Labour Party, but
which is a damning indictment of the Labour Party.
But he's not going to revive the fortunes of Labour. If he somehow wins this election, I simply don't care.
But look at what the woman said. I used them as a protest vote.
Yeah,
which is a thing that I think Reform have got to be wary of, as we've talked about previously. And I said, I don't think people are diehard Reform commitment.
I mean, evidently not, because they didn't vote for them at the last election when they were an option.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this woman said, well, I used them as a protest vote, but now you're here and you're going to fix the Labour Party. I can finally go back to my ancestral party, is what she's saying. Yeah. Now, what this means is that Makerfield is being expressly used cynically here by Burnham. He's just saying it. Oh, yeah, no, he literally said it elsewhere as well. No, this is a vote to change Labour, right? So I'm using, I may have been a great mayor of Manchester, but I'm using Makerfield to save the Labour Party. Now, the people of Makerfield have to ask themselves, do I want to save the Labour Party? Is that what I actually want at this point? Can I trust them to actually do what they should have done all along? Or is the party too compromised?
Well, if the soundings that I've taken are anything to go on, absolutely not, under no circumstances, they want Labour to crash and burn.
Which is what I've heard too.
Yes.
Now, very much how we in the South feel about the Conservatives.
Yeah, yes.
Because these genuinely, with just the North-South
I assume it's the same. I mean, people in the comments, if you're Northern, you can explain. But I want the Tory party to be destroyed. I will not vote for the Tories under any circumstances whatsoever. They must be annihilated completely. And this is coming from somebody who was a member who worked in CCHQ for a while during my work experience when I was like 17, 18 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I despise them. Tell me in the comments if that's your impression as a North.
If you're in the North and if you're in Manchester and you feel the same way about Labour, let us know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like I said, it's a cynical attempt to save the party that deserves to die. Mm. I mean, he literally says, a vote for me is a vote to change Labour. So I found this Substack, because I don't know anything about Manchesterism. I'm not an economist or anything. But maybe you want to do a Brokenomics on this at some point and explain Burnham's philosophy better to us. Because Burnham seems to just have made his entire name on handouts.
Right.
And that's literally what it seems to be. So Burnham, this chap says in here, which I've been watching a lot of podcasts talking about this, and this seems to be the most distilled way of actually framing it, and actually with some numbers, right? So, Burnham thinks he can ignore the bond markets because, as he previously said, he doesn't want to be in hock to the bond markets, right?
Yes.
And this article does a great job of explaining, well, the bond markets are a market, right? If you want to borrow money, you want to sell bonds, then you have to have essentially the market actually in your favor to do so.
Well, when you... on your monthly or weekly basis, however often you're doing, how short you are money, when you offer up the bonds for sale, somebody then has to come along and say, yeah, I'll buy them.
Yeah, there has to be desire to buy them.
And I mean, they can force it to a little bit by making banks and insurance companies hold them, but that doesn't get you very far. You need people to want to buy them.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't want to be in hock to the bond markets, don't borrow $132 billion from them every year, and then you won't be in hock to them. But what this is, this is a bit like you getting home tonight and your 7-year-old is stood there with his arms crossed and then saying, I don't want to be in hock to daddy anymore.
Well, you can get a job, son.
By the way, can I have my pocket money?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work.
No, that's exactly right. If you expect to sell the gilts to the market, then you have to have more demand than supply for it to be worth your time.
And if you don't, the yields will blow out, and that's what's happening now.
And exactly, and therefore the amount you have to spend on the interest and debt payments and whatnot is just way higher. So, okay, great. And so, as Marlow here says, right, Andy Burnham's outriders are claiming that he's going to bring the markets to heel, which means one of three things. Burnham is planning £340 billion of tax rises. Burnham is planning £340 billion of government spending cuts, or he is just delusional. And honestly, I think we're at the he's just delusional part.
So tax rises won't work, because if you put taxes up from this point, you'll actually collect less revenue.
Oh, yeah. Rachel Reeves has discovered
In fact,
this.
We're already starting to see it on some taxes. The tax rate has gone up and people just stopped doing stuff less. And so the tax rate collections will fall.
Laffer curve is undefeated.
It's clearly not going to be spending cuts.
No.
Because Labour are psychologically incapable of this. So therefore,
not just Labour. This is completely anathema to Andy Burnham's personal record as well.
Well, yes. Like and therefore, by process of deduction, it has to be delusion.
Absolutely. And he concludes in this, right? Thinking that you can just ignore bond markets when you are relying on them to lend you the money to pay for public services is insane. Burnham has promised huge amounts of public spending, such as nationalising water companies, and the way he's going to pay for it, and the way he's going about it, implies he has no idea how the government is going to get the money to pay for it. He has spent, in the last decade of Mayor of Greater Manchester, right, £1.4 billion of debt, which is 825% of his authority's annual revenue, that he has borrowed all from the central government via the Debt Management Office. He has never had to consider markets, nor convince anyone who's good for the cash. The Treasury has just cut him a check at preferential rates any time he wanted the money.
Yeah.
That's what underpins Manchester.
Well, that's how local government works. They can basically borrow at the interest rate, the Bank of England rate, plus like a quarter of a percent or even less.
Yes.
And so it's just an open piggy bank.
Yes. And that's how Manchesterism has made Manchester a success. It's been subsidies from central government, right?
Yeah.
They've just, yeah, like we're going to give it to you. We're going to give you an incredibly preferential interest rate. Mm. So you get all of the benefits of essentially the country subsidizing Manchester, right? That's why this is working. The second that stops or can't be done, well, then what happens then? You know,
like,
the thing fails. And it's not like Burnham is actually going to go outside of any of the established rules. He's already told us. Andy Burnham is fully ruled out changing Rachel Reeves's fiscal rules. He's just going to stay within the system as it is. Which, another point, is what's actually substantively different between Burnham and Keir Starmer or Rachel Reeves or anything like that? Yes. They want to do exactly the same things.
This is what I've always been saying. All of the constraints still apply. All of the limitations still apply. All of the he won't. The only way that you can get greater degrees of freedom is by rejecting the system as it stands, rejecting the liberal assumptions that it is based on. It is to do things which will be considered incredibly painful because they involve disruption.
Yes,
and he's not going to do any of that.
No, he's told us explicitly And he wants to do all of the same things as Keir Starmer, more social housing, more things like Starmer declared the other day he was going to bring steel into public ownership, for example, which, okay, fine. I'm not even saying it's a bad idea, but just we're still on the same tracks and we're still heading in the same direction, right?
Oh, we're still fiddling with the same broken dials that aren't connected to anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And so nothing, even if Burnham wins, nothing substantial is going to change. He's going to get in and say, well, can I just start spending money? And the Treasury and whoever else will just say, no, you're not the mayor of Manchester anymore. Like, the bond markets have said no. And he's going to be like, oh, Jesus Christ, what does that mean? And so he's going to find himself, like you've said, just up against a brick wall. He's in the same system. He can't move anything. He can't change anything.
He will get sat down by the permanent secretary who will explain it to you, Prime Minister, what you have to be aware of is, and then he will just end up doing everything that Keir Starmer did.
Exactly.
And Keir Starmer just did everything that Boris Johnson did. Yep. And so that's just how it works, because nobody's rejecting the underlying structures here.
Yeah. Anyway, another attack line that Reform are going to have on him are the grooming gangs, because he failed at the sort of last hurdle on the grooming gangs to really plunge into the issue properly. Because, of course, this is an issue that he, as a Labour Party grandee, doesn't really want to have anything to do with. But who else failed on the grooming gangs, Nige? Oh, that's right, you.
Yeah. I was just thinking, a Reform sure that they want to expose that flank? Because what if there's somebody out there who's got a far better credible line on this than he has?
Yeah, what if? What if there is? Yeah, Nigel didn't do the work. Burnham didn't do the work, but Rupert did do the work.
Right.
And the things that we saw coming out of the group, I mean, Rupert Logue called it the most harrowing 2 weeks of his life.
Yes.
Going through this. And so let's talk about the 1% prediction.
Yes.
Now, all of Reform's talking heads, and just to be clear, we're Restore talking heads, have said, no, you're not going to win, you're going to lose, it's moronic. And then we started getting, well, okay, well, if we're going to get 1%, then it's our deposit to lose, right? You're not going to be that bothered about it.
You're not even going to notice 1%, are you? So, exactly. I don't know why you're bothered.
Exactly. Then it started getting to, well, you're going to split the vote. And it's like, right, so we're going to do better than 1% then. So you're expecting a significant percentage, and therefore we should stand down to make sure that Andy Burnham doesn't get into Parliament and doesn't become the leader of the Labour Party.
Yep.
So everything remains exactly the same.
So to be fair, I am in Winchester, not Makersfield. But, for example, I didn't vote in the council elections because there was no Restore candidate. And if the general election comes around, there's no Restore candidate, I won't vote again.
Yeah.
So if I vote for the Restore candidate, I'm somehow splitting the vote, am I?
Yeah, that's another point that a lot of people have made, saying, well, I wasn't going to vote for Reform.
Yeah.
But I will vote for Restore.
Well, and we know that what they do is they activate non-voters, because we've literally just had 10 elections in Great Yarmouth that demonstrate exactly that. They activate the non-voters.
By a massive margin.
Yes.
By a massive margin. And Ferris had a good post that was going around pointing out, look, this is actually existential for Reform because of the threat to the right. If Restore do better than expected, and in fact, if Restore win, then what's the point of Reform? That'll be the second high-profile by-election that Reform will have lost.
Yep.
To the right and the left, showing that they are a centrist uniparty and yes. The public have gone against centrism.
Well, and before we found out it was Burnham, they were massively the favourites to win this.
By far.
Yes.
Like something like 85% likelihood
yes.
of them winning. And with Burnham, it's on a knife edge. It's within a few percentage points. Right. So the point that Ferris is making, I think, very well, is essentially nothing changes very much for Restore if we don't win this, right? If we got 1%, okay, that'd be egg on the face.
It would be, yeah.
But it doesn't change anything in the grand scheme of things. It's one by-election. If we get 10 or 15%, that's not a bad showing, actually, where we were predicted to get 1% and shows that the ground game has teeth.
Well, I mean, any number higher than the polling average.
Precisely. Any number higher than 4%, basically,
yes.
is a win for Restore. And if Reform were to lose this, that's bad for them.
Yes.
Very bad for them.
I think if Restore does the work, it's not silly to say they can win.
Well, that's a great point. Now, who's Restore's candidate? Well, the BBC have given us a rather mild article about her. This is Rebecca Shepherd. She's 53. She's a local business owner in the area, and she's very concerned about the way things are going in the country, like everyone else. She's actually not terribly dissimilar to the chap that Reform are running.
Okay.
As in just local person who is concerned about the way things
local
are.
Local business owner.
Local business
owner. Parent business owner.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
As the BBC tell us, she's a local businesswoman, 53, has described the party as understanding firsthand the pressures facing local businesses and working families across the area. Very sensible. Got some, good. Again, coverage in The Spectator and coverage in GB News, which was all just surprisingly normal.
They were actually covering Restore.
Yeah.
Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. This video has been put out, but it was a very small video that didn't tell us that much. But you can tell that she's a very normal local person.
I would say a common sense party with a trustworthy leader who cares about his people, his constituents, doesn't try and lie about anything and just really wants the best for the people.
Mm. So that's why she's joined Restore Britain and why she's standing. Okay, it's not a slick Reform production, which honestly I do think is a mistake. We do need high quality production values. But she's normal.
Yeah.
She's not some radical, like, absurd candidate or anything like that. She's very normal, and apparently she's doing very well on the doorstep. We are
okay, good.
Reliably informed. So let's have a look at the odds trackers. If I can get rid of that. So the odds, oh, this is a three-horse race. These odds have been getting dramatically better since this morning when I prepared this podcast. So you can see Labour 4-7, Reform 2-1 or 15-8, Russell Britain 5-1 in many of the leading betting markets. So,
wait, for a few months old party, that's not bloody bad.
And for a party where like Reform and Labour should have this completely sewn up. So to have some outsider who's on, I mean, look at the Greens and the Conservatives, 200-1, 500-1.
It's funny how the Conservatives just aren't. Every so often I see a clip and it's from a Conservative and I remember that they exist.
Yeah.
They're so done.
Yeah, it's only when they put Kemi Badenoch in my face.
They're 500-1.
Yeah. Like there's just no, they're done, they're tanked. But wow. So as I said, this is a three-horse race. Yeah. Now, there are two horses in the lead, but this was 7-1 when I started, 7.5-1 when I started this morning. So the fact the odds are shortening at the bookies is very interesting. Now, that's not, you know, polling or anything, but it's very interesting how literally like the day after this has been announced or 2 days after this has been announced, this is what people are thinking and feeling in the arena. Advance had said.
Well, I think we just don't have much information on Restore in elections at this point, because the only elections they've ever fought in, they have triumphed so completely that it kind of blew out the metrics.
Yeah, and so like Ben Habib has said, look, we're not going to be standing a candidate here, and we urge people to get behind Rebecca, which is great. And so everyone's out canvassing. There's Lee Anderson canvassing in Makerfield as well. And of course, there's our guys out canvassing in Makerfield. So, I mean, it's all to play for.
I mean, for a small party,
it's a huge turnout.
It's impressive how passionate people are about this.
Oh, no.
I mean, it used to be the case that the Liberal Democrats didn't do that well in elections, but they always had a strong ground game.
Yeah.
And it was always attributed to the fact that they'd spent decades building it up. Well, quite obviously, Restore, because it launched a few months ago, has not had decades to build it up. This is because... this is basically because there were five parties running in this by-election who are left-wing and one party that's right-wing.
Basically.
And people are like, I finally have something I want to vote for.
Yes. And there's a real feeling of insurrection about Restore. Like, no, Farage and his Tories, they're men of the system. Mm. You know, I'm sick of the system. Farage is clearly being accepted by the system as well. I mean, one of the frequent left-wing complaints about Reform, about the BBC, is how often Reform are on, like, Question Time and things like this. Right? They're like, oh, look, Reform are constantly getting coverage and promotion from the mainstream media. And it's like, yeah, they are, actually, in a way. That's not wrong. And that does act as a kind of campaigning arm for them and show that they've been accepted by the status quo's consensus. So
the BBC basically endorsed them at this point.
Basically, yeah. And so the lefties are not wrong when they level this critique about the mainstream media and their acceptance of Farage. And it's funny watching the lefties spurg out about Farage because he's just not what you think he is. I mean, Christ's sake.
If Nigel Farage was what the left think he is, I would vote for him campaign for him myself.
No, that's why I'm voting for Rupert Lowe. Anyway, so Russian has been up on the ground. He's
good
got there.
Russian. Yep.
He's from Manchester, so he knows the area a lot better than we do. He says, been in Makerfield 15 minutes, St. George's flags everywhere, Union flags everywhere, Rupert Lowe stickers, we've got this. So I don't know, right? So all I'm saying is this is what I have seen that I think is worth presenting.
It would be amazing, but it's not impossible.
It's not impossible. Like I think the betting markets probably have it right now, but remember, we've got a month until these elections.
Yes.
Right? So these are 18th of June. We have got a full month and it is going to be rampant.
And you know full well what's going to make the difference between coming third, second, or first. It is doing the work.
Yeah.
And if you want to save your country, don't leave it up to Rupert or the five guys around him.
Yeah.
Or just click like on a video every now and again. Turn up and save your country, and it starts here.
Yes. So if you are a Restore Britain member and supporter and volunteer, definitely would recommend you go to Makerfield. We're going to see if we can get a crew to go up there make some content, speak some people on the ground, and see what we can discover from it.
I mean, if everyone who backs Restore, and there's a lot of people who back Restore, if everybody can just do a day, just go up for it, pick a day that works for you and go up, we could do this.
Because exactly. I mean, if this is how it begins,
yes.
Like on day two, it's like this. Mm. On day 30, who knows?
Yeah.
It could be a great Yarmouth. So, and it's very clear that the people in Reform are very worried about this.
Oh, I had noticed. Like yes.
They're very salty online that Rupert Lowe dare, as you said, you know, do the thing that parties do and contest it.
Yes.
But that's only because it looks like actually this could go somewhere. Mm. And who knows? Maybe the people of Makerfield aren't just going to be like, yeah, I'm voting for the protest vote. Maybe they will vote for what they actually want. And maybe that will be revealed to be Restore because it's going to actually be on the ballot.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.